My name is Moin Yassin. I'm the director of Global Vision 2000, which is a UK still registered think tank, special think tank. We'll discuss that later. Currently, I'm in Istanbul, and I've just asked a military guy, how far are we from the border with Israel? It was worth checking. Some people don't know. It's about, what did he say? I need to check what the figure was. It's about 200 plus kilometers from the Hatay province, by the way. Very interesting.
That's in the southern Turkey.
So Hatay used to belong to Syria, and the Turks, which ruled Ottoman Empire, after the treaties, First World War, and the treaties, they were also eyeing Hatay. So Hatay is very near not just Cyprus, Lebanon, and Syria. And by definition, Israel. It's not
now,
very far.
In the background, we can hear, is that the call to prayer?
Yes, I'm in a neighborhood where there are many mosques. Yeah, I like that. We can stop just now if you want.
No, it's fine. No, it's absolutely fine in the background.
I love it.
The most obvious question to start with is, yeah, this part of the world,
yeah,
is the British moved the Ottomans out in the First World War, Allenby.
Correct.
And once the second campaign at Megiddo was finished and the Turks had been routed and really pushed out, then World War One ended. Now, the Turks surely still... this is 100-odd years ago, but do the Turks still harbour a desire to control that part of the world, including Israel and Jordan?
Yes. The short answer is yes, because we need to go dig deeper. Indeed, I'll go further. That's one reason I'm in Istanbul. I knew this year, well, even the year before, is a build-up to the 100th anniversary, Indeed, the 100th anniversary of after... the First World War, there was a so-called Battle of Independence here, 1918 to 22, roughly, And in October, was it 30 or 31, whatever, they created the on the ruins of what you just referred, the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Republic, on a, what is called a laïcité, which is a French model, laïcité secular republic. Yeah. So what's the point? The point is there's been a huge campaign here reminding the Turks of the 100th anniversary. Yeah, you can carry on. Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is some enormous war crimes going on in Gaza. But this is something that's been going on for a long time. I just wonder if you can bring an Islamic perspective to this, because it does seem... as if we've got a kind of persecution. Not, I mean, obviously, Gaza is not just Muslim by any means.
Yes.
But many of the states surrounding Israel in that part of the world, it's almost like a rerun of the Crusades or something. So, can you just give us a perspective, your perspective on what's been going on the last month or so since the Hamas attacks in the 7th of October 2023?
Well, thank you again, because I've dropped everything after. I saw the significance of what was unfolding. And interestingly, back to the 100th anniversary, the Turks, I don't know what Erdogan's trying, well, I know what he's doing, but he's just launched a TV blockbuster coinciding with the 100th anniversary on the Crusades and the Liberator, Salahuddin. We'll probably get that TV blockbuster coming. It's the latest one here on, Turkish martial history, although Salahuddin, the Turks need to be slapped, isn't a Turk, he's a Kurd. That's a fact, from Tikrit province, which is in now Iraq. Anyway, coming back to your question, what's happening? Well, basically, it's quite clear. It's a attempted, use that word carefully, an attempted genocide. It's got nothing to do with Hamas. It's really the Palestinians. Why would you aerial bombard and carpet the whole bloody place? Excuse the language. It's the Palestinians seen as the enemy. And not the victims, obviously. This issue about victim and aggressor. So the aggressor is a Zionist expansionist state, which is nothing new from day one. I think basically they want to get the job done. They want a one-state solution. And Gaza is occupied, no matter, even before October 7, no matter what anyone says, the blockade, etc., of sea, port, airspace. They want to make the Palestinian-occupied territories Israeli territories. And I'd go further. There is an attempted expulsion, ethnic cleansing, genocide attempt to make it happen. So basically they're attempting, forget a two-nation state, what you call solution. I think they're going for the third option, which is to expel the Palestinians who are living currently in occupied, Israeli regime, to either Egypt on the south, Jordan on the west, or Lebanon in the north. So it's an attempted genocide, and they have, obviously, this is a work in progress. I've had to change various videos and editorial. I think there is evidence of a false flag, origins to the war, in which they let this attack. It was a great military attack, by the way, never mind terror. Great military attack by the resistance movement in October 7. But there is evidence that they knew about it. The Egyptians openly claimed they warned Israel. So they weren't caught with their pants down.
Hang on, when you say that, actually, yeah. It wasn't really military, was it? The most of the victims on the Israeli side were civilians, many of whom were taken hostage.
Thank you for asking me that. I've done my research on this. What I mean by military attack was that the people or the soldiers, by the way, the term I use now, I'm telling everyone online, is Mujahideen. I totally reject everything about the mainstream narrative. No apologies. The Mujahideen, the holy warriors, resistance warriors fighting occupation, they attacked the enemy. By the way, I'm not a paid up member of any party. I'm just giving you an Islamic analysis, independent. The holy warriors, the Mujahideen, attacked primarily Israeli targets, military targets. Yes, they did take hostages. I'm not denying that. Why is another issue. In summary, it's to exchange about 5,000 minimum Palestinian hostages or prisoners. That's why they did it. The latest information I have from Israelis is, yes, there were a lot of civilian casualties, but the Israeli sources claim it was the Israeli forces killing their own civilians. That is not my view. There is video reports by Israelis claiming that the Israeli army killed their own people. I'll give you one very common sense argument. If you look at the cars, at that music rave, yeah? The Palestinians do not have armaments that can destroy so many cars in such a way. That is really Israeli missile technology blowing up all those cars. No one's had a chance just to even examine that evidence.
Now, what about President Erdogan's speech yesterday? He's speaking very much in support of Hamas, and he's calling the Israelis a terrorist state. Yes. We haven't heard this kind of speech from them, from the Turks, for a long time.
Yes.
He says the Israelis have been speaking about murdering all those people using nuclear weapons in Gaza. So
yes, yes.
Let me call on Benjamin Netanyahu. Do you have nuclear weapons or not? Explain this, if you have the courage.
Yes.
While threatening people with atomic bombs, nuclear bombs, it does not matter what you have. You would be a goner, he's effectively saying, that if they decided to use nuclear weapons, Israel would be flattened.
Yes.
Why is it that the Israelis are able to get away with threats like this and to have these hidden nuclear weapons? They really think the world doesn't know?
Well, yeah, as you know, we had a eschatology event on nukes in London several years ago. I was only scratching the surface. It's quite clear that Israelis have got them. But I think it's disguised under ambiguity, their ambiguity doctrine. But it slipped by one of their fanatical ministers, who's still in power, by the way. He's still in government. He hasn't, for instance, he hasn't been sacked. So indeed, the Muslim response, including Turkey, I'll come to Turkey in a minute. In general, the Muslim states I'm talking about, never mind public, I have to be specific, the Muslim governments, even armies for that matter, but they're controlled by governments. I think they have been blackmailed by the Zionists, global, not just Zionists, and Israeli Zionists, but global Zionism. We need to understand what the hell's going on here. How have they been blackmailed? I think nukes, probably. That obviously no one can confirm that, but I think, well, if you look at Netanyahu's comments, various alleged comments to keep silent to Muslim Arab nations and Muslim nations, I think behind the scenes, nuclear blackmail is going on. Secondly, companies like BlackRock, who really call the shot, and other Zionist financial entities, controlled entities like IMF, World Bank, are being used to shut up Muslim governments to remain silent or, you know, not doing much. Coming to Erdogan, regardless of what other people say, my independent analysis is, because I did go to the big demo, the 1 million big Palestinian demonstration recently. He is under public pressure. You cannot deny that. He is changing his tune dramatically. Before this happened, I was shocked too. He actually blamed Hamas. But very soon after, he had to say that Israel are the terrorists, is a terror state, and Hamas are liberation fighters. And he's now going further. I make some sorry, carry on,
yeah. Yeah, well, I just wonder why you think he's changed his tune.
Because, well, some people might argue he has to. You know, Turkey is moving towards, you know, the Islamic trend, if you want to call it that. But some people are critical of Erdogan. You know, we're not party political, would say he's playing to the gallery. You know, he has to pretend that he is the Sunni strongman. So the truth lies somewhere in between. Having said that, I have to be critical from an economic angle. The fact of the matter is the trade relations between Turkey under Erdogan, I know they've gone up and down, but the reality is right now, right here, right now, it's about, you know, bilateral trade, about $10 billion. So, you know, make your own judgment.
You mentioned eschatology there, and you and I have been involved in doing these multi-faith groups.
Yes.
looking at biblical prophecy to do with doomsday. Now, I mean, Israel is starting to look increasingly unhinged as a state. I mean, if I was Jewish and I'd been tempted to move there, thinking this was going to be a great homeland, I would now be thinking about moving away. In fact, many on the 7th of October, many Israelis did get on aircraft and just get out of the country because it's become a very tense point. So what do you make of this, this almost a nuclear-armed doomsday cult that the Israelis seem to be, Moeen, from a Quran perspective?
I think now you're talking, as I said, we need to go beyond all mainstream narratives in the Western world, non-Muslim world and Islamic world. Because even when I talk to Turks, even on a very targeted basis, a lot of them don't know Islamic eschatology. And they should get on their bike, because Constantinople is mentioned clearly, by the way, to be occupied. To answer your question, and also not just occupation of Constantinople, which is Istanbul, but also the war near the border, southern border, is clearly mentioned. But to answer your question, Islamic eschatology, yes, basically, I think I was right strategically to home in Islamic eschatology and geopolitics, to use modern jargon. I wasn't just looking at eschatology, because it wouldn't make sense unless you relate it to, you know, military, economic, political, current affairs. Anyway, basically, I think the Zionist death cult, if you want to use that word, or let's use some new terminology, doomsday, death
well,
cult.
Well, I mean, I know, I think you've got to be quite careful about characterising this as Zionist, because we have Zionists out on the streets in London now, and in Tel Aviv, and in Jerusalem even, protesting against this new far right, the Greater Israel bloc that's now running Israel.
Yeah. Well, yes. What are you saying? It's not a Zionist plan, or are you saying it's a Jewish plan? Just to clarify.
Well, look, okay, so there's a big separation between the idea of the Jews coming back to live around Jerusalem and around that part of the world, and what's happening now. I mean, obviously, for those Jews that did do that and have returned for one reason or another, many of them are now looking at what's going on and thinking, this is not a democracy. This is turned into a dictatorship. And this has become the dream that we were sold is now turning to be a nightmare.
Well, you asked me a question, Quranic analysis. I know I've studied Sheikh Imran Hussein, who claims to be the world leader on this. I need to give my own view. I don't look at anyone blindly. If you're looking at the Quran and the Kitab al-Fitan, it's a certain book of the prophetic sayings, you know, they're codified. It's a special book that gives you chapter and verse on these times. The Quran and the Hadith do not, people are going to be up in arms about what I'm going to say, but I'm going to tell you what it says, because it's a bit of interpretation. It doesn't distinguish between Zionists and Jews. The Quran doesn't use the word Zionist, it uses Yahud. Who are Yahud? Jews.
Well, no, the whole Zionist project is something which really was invented in the 19th century.
I know, but you're asking me a question. I'm giving you my independent view, and it is relevant. I'll tell you why. The Quran, I repeat, does not make a distinction between Zionists and Jews. Now, you're going to say, I know there are differences. Don't get me wrong. I know. But even right now, many Jews, let's try to address the reality, do support what's going on.
Some do and some don't. I don't want to get too bogged down in this. Because I just think it's about terminology. Is that?
Oh, okay. Let's go beyond that.
Yeah.
You asked me.
I think it'd be most interesting to hear from you. Is in a nutshell. I mean, we know pretty much what the Christian view is. I'm not so sure about the Jewish view. I think that's mostly from the Book of Daniel. But certainly the Christian view is that there's going to be conflagration, an enormous war, and as that war reaches its hiatus, Christ will return in order to basically bang heads together and sort things out to stop things becoming, you know, to the whole world being destroyed by this. So that's a Christian in a nutshell. What does the Quran say about the final battle?
Well, there's good and bad news here. It's not the Quran. It's the source of my information is the Hadith. The prophetic sayings are codified. And there is a book called the Book of Fitan, the Tribulations. Yeah? Trials and Tribulations. What it says clearly is the Jews will be brought back to the Holy Land. That has happened over the last, 70, 100 years, depends how far back you want to go. So that's happened, yeah? But it also then talks about, well, it also implies they'll have the upper hand. I think you've got to read into that, you know, Jewish supremacy, etc. It talks about Malhama, the Book of Fitan. Malhama implies great wars. Malhama, not one war, but, you know, ongoing big wars. that is clearly mentioned. And again, this is going to be controversial, but I'm telling you what it says. It says the Arabs will be destroyed. But it also says the Jews will be destroyed after the Imam Mahdi comes. So, and the Imam Mahdi is from the family of the prophetic family. He's a descendant. So that means he's Arab. Well, he has to be Arab, I think, despite whatever DNA changes I've made. I'm presuming he's Arab. Well, lineage-wise, he will be Arab if he's from a prophetic family. Might be mixed race, who knows. But lineage-wise, from a prophetic family. And he will overcome the hypocrites. The implication is that there are many Muslim leaders who will have to be confronted. because end times implies a battle between truth and falsehood. There is no middle way. So one thing that the coming, even now, as you know, the world is dividing into two parts. Those who are anti-imperialism, anti-this, that, and the other, oppression, and those who are against that. So the world is actually happening, as we see. People are moving into two camps globally. There will not be a middle ground. So the Imam Mahdi will have to clean out the enemy within, Muslim hypocrites and colluders with global Zionism or imperialism, whatever you want to call it, or neoliberalism. And but it also says that he will, in his battles, mainly in the Holy Land, he will ally with Jesus. He will come, it mentions it very clearly in Damascus. And the two will unite forces against the Jewish messianic leader, Dajjal, the Antichrist. And then the Jews, or Zionists, whatever you want to call them, will be destroyed. That's not my view. I'm giving you, you asked me a question. That's in the book.
Well, so it's fascinating to get that perspective. It's almost, I think we've got a similar thing in the book of Revelation, which is between the two witnesses for God and the Antichrist. So there's a similar kind of, I find it fascinating that there are these parallels. But how do you think, how do you see any of that, or do you see any of that from the Islamic point of view playing out in national politics today?
Yes, I do. I think the area that has got a big question mark right now is Saudi Arabia. And I think we're going to see the lava coming out very soon. And the eschatology actually gives us a key to this. It says that, I need to check exactly on the interpretation, whether it happens before the Malhama, you know, the Great Wars, or at the same time. I would say it's about the same time. Basically, it says the king will die, or what we would call the king. Once he dies, it says, to use modern terminology, conflict will erupt, probably civil war. We know in the current Saudi regime, MBS, yeah, is the de facto ruler. He has, what's the word, clamped down on other heirs, family heirs to the throne, tribal heirs to the throne. It is perfectly feasible that when his father, King Salman, dies, things will erupt there. And if you connect that to the other Holy Land, you know, Palestine, even from what the Israelis are saying, if they are talking about ethnic cleansing and genocide, it looks as though that war is going to continue within the next months. Yeah, next, from this October to next October. And so yes, so.
I mean, what we saw wasn't actually Israel and Saudi Arabia came very close to normalizing relations
before
this Hamas attack on the 7th of October.
Yes. Well, you're right. I looked at what Hamas were trying to achieve, according to them. One was they wanted to end this normalization treaty, which had blotted them out, their aspirations and dreams of a homeland. So that's obviously blown out, although I've heard comments it's not, the Saudis are still up for it. The other was the prisoner exchange, and obviously to break the siege. But anyway, all I'm trying to say is in eschatology, it does mention things happening in Saudi Arabia over the succession of the leader. And that happens at the same time war has broken out in the region.
Now, I wonder if you could just take a Jewish perspective for a minute, because if you imagine what it's like for Jews in Jerusalem with the Islamic world, particularly the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, encroaching on their holy place, which they have done over hundreds of years. How would you feel as a Muslim if the Israeli army were to, say, come to Mecca and start building synagogues on top of holy places in the Islamic world? It's a lot of tension in Jerusalem around the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the temple site for the Jews.
Yes.
How would you feel as a Muslim if the Israeli army were to come down and with builders and bulldozers and start building synagogues to mosques sacred to Islam?
Okay, we've got an electronic thread on Al-Aqsa, like a book video. I forgot to mention one of Hamas's objectives in this war was to protect Al-Aqsa. They call it Aqsa Typhoon, Tufan Al-Aqsa. Yes, I should have mentioned that. So yes, firstly, Muslims have no issue with Jews worshipping anywhere in the Islamic world. Point one, freedom of faith, religion, synagogues, it's not an issue. The issue is that, you mentioned the temple. I've seen videos by Western and other archaeologists claiming that the site, you're talking about the Wailing Wall, the legacy of the Roman destruction. There is arguments by, I'm not in that field, by experts, even Jews, some of them, that the Dome of the Rock, the golden building, and the Aqsa Mosque are two separate. I've been there, 2018? They're two separate, it's a compound, two separate places. Now, as I said, there is video research by non-Muslims who claim that the Jewish temple was not located there. It's more towards the city of David. So that is a disputed fact, point one. Point two is the Israelis, this is an eschatological point, according to eschatology, Islamic eschatology, it doesn't mention the destruction of the Dome of Rock or Al-Aqsa. However, from an eschatological angle, there are parallels with the Jewish experience and Muslim. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. The Jews were, their temple was destroyed twice, by Nebuchadnezzar, and the Romans. Well, under the Muslim control of Jerusalem since Caliph Umar, 636 till the Ottomans, 1917, it was occupied by the Crusaders, and now the Zionists. Now, the Crusaders didn't destroy it, desecrated it, definitely. So the point I'm making is, yes, theoretically, it could be destroyed. And if it is, you know, I understand where the Zionists are coming from. The reason they want to do it isn't just about Jewish or Zionist supremacy. It's to inaugurate their Jewish leader, messianic leader coming. You know, that will be his, whatever, a holy place or base, center, whatever. So if that happens, that will definitely lead to not a regional war or even Islamic world war versus Zionism. It will be a global war.
There definitely does seem to be a lot of focus around, you know, it's almost as if this whole situation is building up and building up. The yes. tensions are rising up to snap at some point, to break out in a much wider war, which may bring in
yes.
The Chinese, where the Americans and the Russians are already in the region, you know, a potential world war out of this. Now, there's an American Freemason called Albert Pike in 1871
yes.
that did actually write a letter to the creator of, well, he was one of the originators of the mafia in Italy, and the guy who was doing a similar job to him in America, which is to bring all of those individual independent states into one centrally controlled federation, yes. which is yes. now the USA.
Yes.
Mazzini was doing something, Giuseppe Mazzini in Italy,
yes.
to turn that into a one single country rather than a lot of independent states. His plan called for a First World War, which would drive this is 1871,
yes.
drive the Ottomans out of the Holy Land, the Second
yes.
World War to plant the Crusader state. So I wonder, is there much discussion about this plan in the Islamic world and in Turkey and places like that?
Well, I don't know the details, but the very fact that the Turkish government is sponsoring a whole series, it's not new, I don't know when they started it under Erdogan, but various martial heroes from Alp Arslan who came into Anatolia, 1071, Battle of Manzikert, to Ertugrul, the father of the Osmani dynasty, and Abdul Hamid, Sultan Abdul Hamid, and now Salahuddin, shows at one level there is what you call consciousness by some Muslims about the history, you know, that this is that the era that we're living in and the times, you know, requires some sort of revival of Islamic martial history. But yes, I'm aware of what you're saying. And the latest geopolitics that I've heard from people like, what's his name, Douglas McGregor or Scott Ritter, is that the Zionist state want to, let me come back to what you said, eschatology, Christian, and the Zionists, because they are strange bedfellows. There are tensions and contradictions. There is a view by Western non-Muslim geopolitical thinkers that the Israelis want to and need to transform the internal conflict with the Palestinians, not just Hamas and Gaza and the West Bank and Jerusalem, into a regional war. How? By leveraging the Americans. How would that happen? It looks as though the Lebanon front would unlock that. And you'll say, why? Well, if you're going to have Jewish world domination or anything near it, they need the existing superpowers fight each other and destroy each other. So if I was an American or a Brit or a European, I'd be very, very, I'd pull out my hair and say, why on earth are we backing this Zionist regime?
With the present situation in Gaza, bombing still going on, hospitals being overtaken, occupied by Israeli Defense Forces, with the soldiers going from ward to ward, interrogating patients, interrogating hospital
yes.
staff, nurses and doctors. Where do you think this is going?
Well, Marwan Bishara, the top analyst of Al Jazeera, mentioned the war's turning into a war against babies and hospitals. Well, obviously, that clearly blows up the Zionist propaganda. The war's against Hamas. Is it hell? It's against the people, ordinary people, civilians and armed. They want to force them to have a Nakba, as he claimed, a second Nakba. So basically, this also comes to another point. We're facing two wars here. One is the info war, you know, propaganda war, and the real war. There is no doubt about it in my mind that anything the Israelis say is a pack of lies. It's nothing new. And all the atrocities there, mainly they're committing them. And and the hospital business, oh, Hamas is using it as this, that, and the other. You know, you can't believe anything they're saying. If you're going to talk about Hamas, which is an amazing fact, military history, they've got an underground city, and it's not really linked to, as they're claiming, mosques, churches, hospitals, etc. And indeed, that underground city is making this into a classic urban war. And the latest information I've seen the videos, is that out of the, 600 Merkava tanks, 180 have been destroyed. How many people, soldiers are in each? 4. That's almost 800 Israeli soldiers have been killed in combat. That explains their fury against not Hamas, the Palestinians, and carpet bombing. The Israelis, amazing disclosure here, are losing the war. And the longer this continues, there will be one state, but they might, I think the Zionists need to look in the mirror and face the future, which may be Palestine overcoming them. Yeah, there could be a one state, but in which they're defeated. They should really pull their hair. They are losing militarily.
Why hasn't there been more support from Egypt? I mean, this is a country which has got enormous sympathy, the people have anyway, for the Palestinians. Yes. And of course, the Israelis have over the years had some very brutal wars with the Egyptians. It seems, I mean, it would be surely quite simple for the Egyptians to open the borders and allow those that really desperately want to get out. They're being bombed. Some of these nearly 2 million people to get out.
Well, that raises many issues. Egypt and Jordan have peace treaties, right? They've not got anywhere near to ripping them up. Indeed, the Egyptians have got 300,000 troops at Gaza border to prevent the Gazans having some sort of, I don't know, open space or refuge.
Yeah, but the Egyptians are saying that the Israelis threaten to bomb the border crossing unless they have control of it.
Yeah, I mean, without going into details, the point I'm making, and I have criticised the Egyptians, is that, you know, this exposes that the liberation of Palestine or any other part of the Islamic world, which means liberation, is going to come from established Muslim armies. They have shown their collusion. They're twiddling their fingers at the border. I mean, it raises so many questions. So the liberation of Palestine is going to come with the army of Imam Mahdi. It is quite clear, looking at what the Egyptian army is doing. I mean, their argument is, oh, if we open the border, obviously it's going to impact on them. But also the homeland issue, you know, the Palestinians won't return, et cetera, et cetera. So we're doing them a favor. I think that's their argument. The very fact we're not letting them out when they're being carpet bombed, we're actually doing them a favor, really. I mean, I know it's a very complex situation, but we know what the Israelis want. They want them all out. They've started with the north of Gaza. Indeed, the reports I'm getting just now is there is bombing starting in the south. So anything the Israelis are saying is a load of rubbish. Oh, we're giving you safe havens or whatever, safe passage to the south, and then they're bombing the south.
Well, I mean, we've already seen something like 12,000 civilian deaths out of the 2 million or so people who live in Gaza.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to be the fate of these people? I mean, the indigenous people of that part of the Holy Land. I mean, you know, it does seem as if, for them, certainly, the Holy Land has been turned to hell.
Well, I guess what you've said is I agree. Firstly, anyone who dies, I'm not justifying it, but I'm just explaining, anyone who dies defending their soil, their homeland, their mosques, churches, whatever, is a martyr. They're not dead in Islam. I'm talking about even civilians, not just armed, obviously, soldiers, mujahideen. They are seen as martyrs in Islam. They have achieved success in this life and the life hereafter. So you know, they're not forgotten and they're not, you know, history. Having said that, Hamas argues, I'm not Hamas, they argue that a price has to be paid against fighting the oppressor and oppression. And if that means civilians have to be, I wouldn't say word sacrifice, if they are killed in the battle, that is the price they are willing to pay. I don't want to enter that discussion, but I'm just giving you the mindset of the Palestinians.
Well, actually, Erdogan has made it clear. He says Hamas is a political party and they're not terrorists.
Yes.
They're actually freedom fighters. This is President Erdogan's statement. And I don't think none of the Western leaders seem to be going along with this at all. He's saying that Hamas has seized control and imposed authoritarian rule over the territory. Well, this is actually the Western view. What he's saying is the opposite, that this is a legitimate form of self-defense.
Yes. The main comment on that is this has exposed the Western governments. Basically, the fact that they are not backing a ceasefire is a green light to use Western technology funded by Western citizens to bomb innocents. I mean, this is... war crimes being committed in the name of Western people. And it shows you they're colluding with it. Absolute, no doubt about it. But I go further in my analysis, which I'm publishing on our website, is I say, should we be surprised at this? Whether it's Trudeau, Canada, whether it's US or Britain or France, they're built on genocide and ethnic cleansing. You'll say, justify that. How many nations have the Americans ethnically cleansed and genocide in America? 500, for your information. 500 American Indian nations were genocide or exterminated. Lesser or more in Canada. And Britain with the Celts, starting with the Celtic nations. I mean... no wonder they're supporting the Israelis, because it's in the Western DNA. That's something to think about.
Yeah. Also, I mean, what we're seeing pictures on our television screens of these Hamas bases designed by artists underneath hospitals. I'm reminded of the 9/11 attacks. We had the same sort of thing with Bin Laden in his caves in Afghanistan.
Mm. Yeah, well, as I told you, that I don't believe anything the Israelis are saying. And I mean that, anything. They've honed it to an art. They've got away with impunity for decades.
But do you see any parallels with these 9/11 attacks? The Israelis have certainly been saying this is Israel's 9/11.
Yes.
A bigger proportion of Israelis were killed. They don't specify whether it was by the IDF or by Hamas, but a bigger proportion of Israelis were killed than of the American population on 9/11.
Well, what I mean, I've heard that comment where Netanyahu is using that, saying, oh, we've been hit and you're next, meaning Western nations, and that's why you should support us. No, what I mean by 9/11 is that, as you know, the word false flag terror. What I mean by this is the Israeli 9/11 is they have used this attack, whether they, you know, let it happen or made it happen, I don't want to go into that, but basically they've used this, whether it's the Twin Towers in New York or in Israel, yeah, in October 2023, they've used that technique to carry out whatever they want to carry out. The Americans under Bush carried out the global war, not on terror, off terror, starting with Afghanistan, moving to Iraq, and then under the Arab Spring, I believe that was part of it. A different dynamic. The Israelis have used that technique to have their final Nazi solution, attempted Nazi solution against the Palestinians, to end the dreams and reality of a Palestinian homeland by expulsion, ethnic cleansing, and attempted genocide. That's what I mean by the parallels of 9/11 and the Israeli 9/11.
Now, listen, you lived in Scotland. You also lived in Kent for quite a long time. You're now in Istanbul. Can you give our listeners a flavour of what life is like in Turkey?
Well, yes, I thought, and I've heard others are doing this from UK. I don't know how many Muslim, you know, Brits raised in, Muslims raised in UK and maybe other countries. I mean, I believe one of the reasons I came here, unfortunately, I'm right. I came just before the Ukraine war because, you know, based on our research, I felt that, hey, I've got special knowledge. I better move to the region. Also, the region is a big region. Istanbul, why Istanbul? Well, it's mentioned in eschatology. And also in terms of global cities, it is a global city. London is not really it's an artificial global city. Istanbul is in the crossroads of not just three civilizations, but three continents. It's a great city. However, I'm critical of the Turks. You know, I've got Pakistani heritage. There are many other Muslims here from all over the world. But I think after the Syrian war, I've come here over 20 years, by the way, on and off. I think they've become not just nationalist, but racist because of the Syrian, what's the word, refugees. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Turks tell me, it's not my view. So they've become a bit national. Well, I don't know whether a bit, but... racist in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite important for the Turks to be nationalistic in a way, because I mean they're being dragged in these two directions, well maybe even three directions, between China, Russia, and NATO. So they need to be, you know, they need to assert their own independence. It's absolutely necessary, you know. So you're in old Constantinople, but what's life like day to day there, different? Now, what's different to living in Britain?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just saying, you know, it's a very cosmopolitan city, great heritage. Living here from a Muslim angle is that certain things that I take for granted here, you cannot experience as a British or European Muslim, you know, by living in a non-Muslim country. For instance, a very simple thing, I think you mentioned the call to prayer, yeah? That is very important as to a Muslim's spiritual life. Yes, Europe does allow currently mosques to be built, But it's superficial because in Muslim communities, you want a living Islam. Part of a living Islam is the five times public call to prayer and having proper purpose-built mosques, not little houses converted or whatever. In Istanbul, you have, under Erdogan regime, mosques more or less on every street. A lot of them are new. In this area, for instance, this one just up the road, that's new. And I find that everywhere. So this is part of the, what's the word, re-Islamization, step by step, albeit in Turkey. They have their own technique. So the mosques are important to me. And the ability to access them, to go there, plus you've got the whole heritage of the classical mosques. And then just living with Muslim people. You know, I'm not saying the Turks are perfect Muslims. I have to be honest. They're still very secular. For instance, this is the irony of Turkey. Next to that mosque I mentioned here, in this area, there's several. There are off licenses, yeah? Now, I don't know whether it's this area I'm in near the sea, but this is Turkey, and Islam in Turkey. You got to expect the unexpected.
Well, I mean, it sounds quite a healthy society where you're giving people a bit more of a choice about, you know, their beliefs and tolerating others. And yet you've got a very strong faith society as well, which is, you know, giving some moral guidance and that sort of thing. Do you prefer it? Can I just be very direct with you? Prefer living there to Britain?
Yes. I was planning it a while ago. I'm also involved in, I don't have to do it, but, you know, other than my work with the think tank, I'm also pioneering helping the Turkish economy. It's nothing new, but on medical tourism, where I'm going to, I've got a team in the UK and elsewhere to facilitate quality, it's taken me a time by the way, hospital treatment, especially international medical tourism for Brits and others who want to access medical treatment here. And I don't mean hair transplants, which everyone is into, or what's the other one? Plastic surgery. The thing is, the top hospitals here can offer A to Z at maybe several 100% cheaper than the UK. So we're setting up our operation for that. But to answer your point, yes, of course. I mean, it's also the television. It's not just going to the mosque or mosques. The TV, you know, the programming is different. So whether it's a television, whether it's a mosque, whether even a social fabric, I haven't seen rowdy behavior here. I was trying to say that when they quiz me about my origins, I say I'm British, but they see my Pakistani identity. And they, as soon as they see that, they say Kurdish. What does Kurdish mean? Brother of the country. So if you're a Pakistani or heritage, whether you're British or not, they're quite fond, actually.
Now, I mean, there is, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. It doesn't really have a properly elected prime minister anymore. But do you think that if the Turks wanted, that the Pakistanis would help them out with nukes? I mean, the Americans have nukes in Turkey.
Yes, I made a comment actually recently after Erdogan made reference to nukes. I've double checked. Yeah, by the way, everything that we are talking about, you know, it's a work in progress. You often have to double check facts. I check facts with a Pakistani analyst. Yes, Pakistan, as we know, does have nukes. Turkey officially, as far as I know, doesn't. Erdogan refer to them. My understanding from what I've been told is they have not been transferred after double checking. And indeed, this argument about Iran being a threat to the West is Force bullshit. The threat, especially the Israelis talk about, it's not Iran, it's bogey. By the way, eschatological, that's important. In the eschatology, it says 70,000 Jews will come out of Isfahan. In other words, we have to be very careful about the Iranian self-image and how it's been set up by Israel. The nukes in the Islamic world are in Pakistan, not Iran. Now, that's something very deep I've talked about. In other words, Pakistan is targeted and will be targeted to denuclearize. So right now, although Muslims, Pakistan has nukes, whether they have passed that on to Turkey is a big question mark. Some people deny it.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder also, because you're in a very interesting situation in Turkey when it comes to Russian sanctions. So, you know, the Turks, haven't they economically benefited from this? It's much easier, of course, for the Russians to get things via Turkey. That's no problem. So with the Turkish middlemen, they must be making a fortune out of those sanctions.
Oh yes. Well, I've studied Turkish posturing between East and West. I mentioned it's a real world capital. Despite Erdogan's whatever weaknesses, he's on a tightrope and he's played that very well. Yes, a lot of Russian billionaires' business is conducted via, as you said, good word, middlemen. Turkey has benefited. Correct. Talking about life here, it's not just the mosques or the television, it's the food also. It's not just self-sufficient, but amazing fusion of East and West culture. Yeah, you can see the.
And what about the weather? It must be a bit warmer than Scotland.
Oh, of course, and London. Yeah, good weather right now. Yeah, great. The one thing that, for everyone, I don't really like big cities that are part of the modern world. However, Istanbul, this is deep knowledge, it is very, it is great because the water, the seas divide the city. You know, you've got the European side, you've got the Asian side, divided by the Bosphorus, which goes up to Russia, and then the Marmara. So it's great. It doesn't really feel as though you're in a city of 20 million.
Do you ever get the Russian Black Sea Fleet chugging backwards and forwards through the Bosphorus, and British warships, American warships?
Yeah, I love it. I love the water, as I said. I forgot to mention the hammam, another secret of Turkish medicine, which is forgotten, by the way, because of its secularization. I go to the hammam in Üsküdar, and then you go down to the Bosphorus, you know, the seafront, smell the air, and the sights you see is unbelievable. You can have massive oil tankers. You can have the cruise ships and wheat ships carrying wheat and warships. Erdogan really beat his chest for the 100th anniversary by having 100 Turkish warships going down the Bosphorus the other day. So, yeah, the sights you see are different from the Thames.
Okay, so you know, your website does deal with a lot of these issues that no one else seems to, which are the interfaith eschatological stuff. Can you just let listeners know whereabouts they can find you, Maureen?
Yes, alhamdulillah, some of the threads are reaching million hits just in their own right. So we've had millions of hits. It's like a video. I didn't, conceptualize it this, but it's developed into a video Wikipedia, not just in English. I know Urdu, so I can access top thinkers from the Pakistan and India area. It's globalvision2000.com, www.globalvision2000.com. I think it's popular not just because it's independent, but video is a language. You know, you don't have to know the language, you can see the pictures. So I think, common sense.
Okay, Maureen Yassin, over in Istanbul. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Tony, for having the opportunity to share some of my latest thoughts. Thank you.